Morning TNC family on this second Sunday in August. I want to talk to you today about not talking, because I was meeting with a friend just a few weeks ago and he was describing a difficult weekend in his marriage. At the end, he said, "If I had just not said anything, it would have been better." And because in the news recently, there have been two high-profile defamation lawsuits because of words said, filled with negativity and lies and slander, first between two movie actors, and then between victims of the 2012 Sandy Hook shooting and a money-loving talk show host. And you probably know both stories because they gained wide national attention but caused enormous damage. And it just would have been better if the offending folks had kept their mouths shut. And then I was watching the NFL Hall of Fame game, the preseason football exhibition, played each year in conjunction with the Hall of Fame inductions. This year's game was the Jaguars versus the Raiders, and some of you know that on the Raiders this year is perhaps the league's best wide receiver, Davante Adams, who last year played for the Packers, where Aaron Rodgers is quarterback. Aaron Rodgers, of course, isn't just a football star, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. He's also popular across all media genres. I mean, his new girlfriend this week has been a lead story on, get this, not just Twitter and Instagram, but organizations as diverse as Golf Digest, Whiskey Riff, Hollywood Life, the New York Post, and Fox News. So, what he says gets airtime, not just across sports networks, but also on entertainment programs and news programs and political podcasts. And so, during this Hall of Fame game I was watching, announcer Chris Collinsworth was talking about one of the reasons Davante Adams left the Packers to go to another team, and he said that he had spoken with Adams ahead of the game down on the field and had asked the receiver why he wanted to leave the Packers and go to the Raiders, and Collinsworth said, quote, "Adams was pretty open with me." And he said one of the factors, not the only factor, but one of the factors, definitely a factor, was he didn't know how much longer Aaron Rodgers was going to play. It was the uncertainty around Aaron Rodgers, end quote. Now, why is there uncertainty? Well, because every year for the last several, Rodgers talks about retirement, or about playing for another team, or about holding out because he wants more money. And so far, it's just been all talk, but it's year after year after year, and your words matter. And some people don't understand the power of their words. And Aaron Rodgers is an example. Like two seasons ago, when he discussed the vaccines, he was shocked when, after he criticized them and then lied about them, people were upset at his words. And just recently, he literally talked about the benefit of psychedelic drugs, which thousands of Americans have died from, and he's confused why folks are upset at his remarks. Aaron, it's because you're Aaron Rodgers. But Rodgers struggles with feeling responsible for how his words influence those listening to him, which, and now to the Bible, stands in contrast to the Apostle Paul's words to the church and to a community and to a people he loves. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29. "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up, according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen." In other words, you don't just talk for yourself, but for others' sake too. Another translation puts it this way: "Do not use harmful words, but only helpful words, the kind that build up and provide what is needed, so that what you say will do good to those who hear you. In other words, think about other people's needs when you talk. You have a responsibility to them. And in both translations, and actually in pretty much every translation, you'll come across that phrase, only say. Only say, which means you don't have to tell everything, just the only part. Only what will build up, lift up, encourage, strengthen, and enrich, which means, shh, hey, Aaron, take one for the team. Stop talking. Keep some things to yourself. Now, we all have some learning to do when it comes to being more quiet. I know. I put my foot in my mouth far too often. But I hear these stories, my friend's marriage, public personalities slandering others, Aaron Rodgers not weighing the impact of his public comments, and I think it's just so critical, TNC, that we remember and re-remember the value of quiet, the power of quiet. Because if you are at work, and you want to get along well with your colleagues, and you don't understand the power of quiet, then you are asking for problems. And if you are at school, and you want to be the best of students in class, but you don't understand when to talk and when to be quiet, you're asking for struggles. And if you're married, and you don't understand this, you are asking for conflict. And if you're single on a first date, and you are talking the whole time, your next date will be another first date. And so I want to remind us all today, from the wisdom of Scripture, of the power of quiet. And I think this is going to be very helpful for us. So let me remind you now of three things that quiet is good for. And here's number one. Number one, quiet is good for your reputation. Quiet is good for your reputation, or in the words of the writer of Proverbs, chapter 17 and verse 28, even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent, considered perceptive. Or, chapter 21 and verse 23, whoever watches his mouth and guards his tongue keeps himself out of trouble. Or listen to Jesus in Matthew chapter 15 and verse 11, quote, he then called the crowd together and said, listen and take this to heart. It's not what you swallow that pollutes your life, but rather what comes out of your mouth. Which is why the writer of Ecclesiastes, giving advice on how to live wisely, says that the one who is wise is the one who knows when to keep and when to throw away, when to tear and when to mend, when to speak and when to be silent. Because there is a time to speak, but that's another podcast. Point one today, knowing when to be quiet will be very good for your reputation. I listened recently to a 34-minute interview between Terry Gross and Johnny Greenwood. Terry Gross has famously hosted NPR's culture program, Fresh Air, since 1985. It's an interview show that mostly highlights the work of actors, authors, athletes, and musicians. And Johnny Greenwood is a classical music performer, plays viola, piano, trumpet, guitar, and several other instruments. And he is also a composer, composing Academy Award-nominated film scores and winning multiple other screen awards. But most famously is known for being the keyboardist for the rock band Radiohead. Radiohead is an English rock band formed in the 80s who have sold more than 30 million albums worldwide, won 6 Grammy Awards, been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and at the 27-minute mark of this interview, Greenwood tells an amazing story about joining Radiohead as a keyboard player after lead singer Thom Yorke fired his then keyboard player. And now I'm quoting from the interview, except I'm not going to do the English accent. Thom's band had a keyboard player I think they didn't get on with because he played his keyboard so loud. So when I got the chance to play with them, the first thing I did was make sure my keyboard was turned off when I was playing. And I must have done months of rehearsals with them with this keyboard, and they didn't know that I'd already turned it off. They made quite a racket, quite a noise. It was all guitars and distortion. And so I would pretend to play for weeks on end. And Thom would say, "I can't quite hear what you're doing, but I think you're adding a really interesting texture because I can tell when you're not playing." And I'm thinking, "No, you can't, because I'm not really playing." And I'd go home in the evening and work out how to actually play the chords. And cautiously, over the next few months, I would start turning this keyboard up. And that's how I started in with Radiohead. Terry Gross responds in the interview, "Wait a minute. I want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. Johnny, you turned off the keyboard? So you were fingering the keys, but no sound was being emitted and nobody noticed?" Answer: yes. Because quiet is your friend. Quiet is good for your reputation. And in my experience, TNC, sometimes, often by accident or because I'm feeling tired or introverted in a particular situation, I have said virtually nothing during an entire conversation. And I would rate my performance during those conversations as some of my greatest conversations. Sometimes people assume I agree with them, like me more as a result, and approach me later with questions open to my ideas. Sometimes people assume I'm not talking because I've already thought it all through, and so they think I'm smarter than I am. Sometimes I sense people are more grateful to me for listening to them and caring about what they have to say than for talking. I'm telling you, quiet can be good for your reputation. Proverbs 17:28, "Even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent." Quiet is good for your reputation. Now, number two, here's another thing quiet is good for. Number two, quiet is good for your soul. Quiet is good for your soul, which is why in Acts chapter 20, the writer, Luke, tells us that Paul and his friends are about to set sail to Troas and head to their next stop. But instead of getting in the boat, Paul says, "You guys go ahead. I want to walk. I'll see you when I get there." And it's a total trip from Troas, I should say. It's a total trip of about 25 miles, but Paul wants to be alone to experience the solitude of walking the countryside and talking to God. A pattern, it turns out for Paul, after Damascus and before Jerusalem and while in Rome and over and over and over, you see that Paul believes strongly that there is a link between silence and wisdom, quietness and peace, stillness and joy. And it's not just Paul who advocates silence. Jesus, of course, did over and over and over. Jesus went to the wilderness for an extended period of fasting and prayer. He also went into solitude when he heard of the death of John the Baptist, when he was going to choose his disciples, after he had been involved in healing a leper, and after his followers had engaged in ministry. He went into solitude in the Garden of Gethsemane before his greatest task. And you understand, I hope, that solitude and silence was not absence for Jesus. Jesus did not go away and prioritize quiet in order to experience some magical void. Rather, it was an opportunity to be aware of a truer presence. Are you listening? Solitude is a big deal. It's a big big deal. But silence is not absence. It's the environment for you to do the hard work of confession, the hard work of prayer, the hard work of honesty and reflection, the hard work of being still, the hard work of letting go of anger or revenge or worry, the hard work of preparing for a hard conversation or task ahead. What you do in solitude matters. So don't waste it by doing nothing. I mean, imagine you were in the presence of Steph Curry on a basketball court, or Denzel Washington on an acting stage, or Bill Gates around an office table, or Gordon Ramsay in the kitchen. Please tell me you plan to not just be quiet, chill out, lay out, snooze out, and experience some void. Instead, leverage those moments, soak it in, learn from it, pay attention to it. In the words of Tish Harrison Warren, Anglican priest and author, whose 2018 book we used here for our TNC summer reading series, and whose 2021 publication, Prayer in the Night, has won numerous awards, including Christianity Today's 2022 Book of the Year, quote, "It's in solitude that God's greatest work in us takes place." And if you read story after story in the scriptures, from David to Elijah to Daniel to Esther to John the Revelator, it's in moments of quiet that our soul connects most deeply with God and finds its greatest healing and hope and courage and direction and faith. And actually, most of the world's religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, Judaism, all overwhelmingly advise that faith without quiet is dead. And I'm not trying to make a bigger point than needs to be made, but I am trying to say, what if something as simple as silence is a bigger deal than we think? What if in our era of never-ending noise, where you go to bed to the sounds of YouTube clips and Netflix and Prime, and you wake up to the sounds of alarms and music and coffee percolating, what if something as simple as silence could be a key for reviving our souls? What if, in the words of Dale Allison, perhaps we finally did away with God indirectly by exterminating silence? So, in the silence, we have to listen and observe and taste and see and take notes. Number one, quiet is good for your reputation. Number two, quiet is good for your soul. And finally today, number three, quiet is good for your mouth. Quiet is good for your conversations. Because if quiet is good for your insides, your heart, your soul, then it is inevitable that it will be good for your outsides, your mouth, your conversations. Why? Well, because your insides are linked to your outsides. Your soul is linked to your mouth. Listen to the words of Jesus recorded in Matthew chapter 12, verse 24. Out of the overflow of your heart, the mouth speaks. Out of the overflow of your heart, your mouth will speak, which means if my mouth gets me in trouble, if I've got a mouth problem, then I have a heart problem. Listen, TNC, if you listen to an employer or a colleague or a family member or a politician or a teacher, if they have a mouth problem, lies, anger, words that incite violence or distrust or fear, then you can be sure they have a heart problem. Because whatever is going on in my heart, eventually over time, it's going to come out of my mouth. And I can try by willpower to hold my tongue, but if my heart doesn't change, inevitably my mouth is going to lead. Which is why the Bible is so abundantly clear that a transformed heart must be a top priority if you want your words to be life-bringing and joy-producing. And it's quiet that is the fertile soil for a transformed heart, because the fruit of God-infused solitude is always increased sensitivity and compassion for others, and a new freedom to be with people, a new attentiveness to their needs, new responsiveness to their hurts, new appreciation for their presence. Plus, and this is just a real practical matter, you're just more interesting when you talk if you've had some quiet time first. As Henry David Thoreau famously pointed out, quote, "Society is commonly too cheap. We meet often not having had time to acquire any new value for each other, and so we meet at meals and give each other a new taste of that old musty cheese that we are." And so, friends, we would benefit ourselves and everyone who hears us if we increase the quiet in our lives. Quiet is good for your mouth, good for your conversations. So where are you experiencing quiet? A quiet car ride as you commute, a long meandering walk, just sitting still, taking in deep breaths on your back porch? Because the kind of thoughts and peace and centering and perspective that takes place in quiet moments is unmatched anywhere. A kind of connection and attunement to the divine things can happen so that there's a kind of readiness to have really wonderful conversations in your home, with your kids, with your parents, with your work colleagues. Notice, the work of solitude is not complete if it doesn't end in conversation. In other words, solitude is not just done for solitude's sake. It's so that you can engage in conversations. This is partly why Sherry Turkle, who is a professor of science at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, author of a couple of best-selling books, and has actually spent significant time studying quiet and social connection, she writes in her book, Reclaiming Conversation, a great book, quote, "Reclaiming conversation begins with reclaiming our capacity for solitude." And later she says, "Solitude is what allows you to reach out to others and see them as separate and independent. It allows you to know you don't need them to be anything other than who they are." In other words, she says the main reason to be stilled and filled in solitude is so you can then engage with others. Because quiet is not enough. And introverts especially, we need you to speak up. So, after you're quiet, there will come a point in time when you have to talk. And if you've done the hard work of saying yes to God's Spirit in the quiet, then you will find great joy and excitement and purpose as you move forward into the world of conversations and projects and teamwork and togetherness. Quiet is good for your mouth, for your conversations. Now let me end with a story, a metaphor. Several years ago, I had the privilege of traveling to Israel, and among other places, I visited the West Bank and the ruins of the ancient city of Jericho. The story of Jericho in Joshua 6 and 7 is one of the great stories of the Bible, because the first glimpse of Jericho for the Israelites was simultaneously awe-inspiring and terrifying. They had been wandering in the desert for 40 years and had never seen anything close to the skyline of Jericho. And the closer they got, the smaller they felt. Jericho had a 6-foot-wide lower wall and a 50-foot-high upper wall that encircled the city. The 12-acre city was an immovable fortress. Other nations had tried but had never been able to break through or break down the walls. So when God promises Israel the city, it seemed like God had promised them the impossible. And what's worse, God tells Joshua this battle strategy. Quote, "Your entire army is to march around the city once a day for 6 days, but do not give a war cry. Do not raise your voices. Do not say a word until the day I tell you to shout. Then on the seventh day, you are to march around the city 7 times with the priests blowing their trumpets, and then shout, and the wall of the city will collapse. And I'll tell you, every soldier in the army has to wonder, hey, Joshua, are you hanging out with Aaron Rodgers? Because you're under the influence of something. I mean, why not use a battering ram? Why not scale the walls? Why not cut off the water supply or shoot flaming arrows over the walls? But instead, God tells them to silently circle the city. And that after they have circled 13 times over 7 days, that then the wall would fall. And so imagine now the first time they walk around, and the soldiers who must have felt a little foolish walking in quiet. But then with each circle, their faith starts growing stronger, and with each circle, a holy confidence grows inside their souls, and their insides are being formed, and by the seventh day, their faith is ready to rumble, and you can read the whole story later, but on the seventh day of circling Jericho, God delivers on a 400-year promise. It was a miracle they had been hoping for and waiting for their entire lives. And turns out the battle was won before the battle even began. It was won in the days of quiet. A perfect metaphor for today's teaching. So TNC, what is your Jericho? And where, when, how is your silence? Let's pray. God, I pray now for every person listening, for every person who is so busy with life's cares and responsibilities and distractions, so busy that quiet feels pretty elusive. I pray that you would give them wisdom so that they can discover the where, when, and how of quiet. So they can discover the power of quiet. Because God, we want to meet with you, and we do want to be stilled by your Spirit for our worries, but then we want to be filled by your Spirit to re-engage with hope and with courage and with purpose. And so I pray for every person listening, God. May they know your presence and your power. And now, TNC, may the Lord bless you and keep you. Make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Turn his face toward you and give you peace.